would like to welcome everyone to Just the Facts, the We Could Be Wrong, But Who Cares After show that is checking facts on statements made during the show and giving additional fact-based information. I'm Sean, your host. I'm not here to persuade anyone to the left or the right or to condemn anyone's stances on the subject or their statements. I'm only here to try and provide facts and data to the audience so you can make a better informed decision on your own. If you have specific questions or comments or disagree with me or would like more details on a subject, please email me at wcbwjustthefacts@aol.com. Remember, facts are black and white, not red or blue. I will quote my sources, and my info about the sources comes from mediabiasfactcheck.com. If anyone knows a better source, please let me know. All right, well, let's get the show started. Let's see. Bingo, there I am. All right. So, one of the first things that came up was, is the media biased? Well, I think we've all discussed this before, and we all know the media is biased. This is mainstream media. These are the places I think of as mainstream media. ABC, CBS, CNN, Fox, MSNBC, NBC, from written ones, the New York Times, New York Post, Washington Post, USA Today. Oh, I didn't put Good Morning America, because I watch that one every weekend, especially with George Stephanopoulos. I'll have to check on that one after and see. But as you can see, they're all biased in some way. Some of them are center biased, which is very little biased, like ABC and CBS are center. LA Times is center. The New York Post is right center. Wall Street right center. But there are some that start getting more like left bias and right bias. And then you start looking at the factual content also. And a lot of them are high factual, but there are some that are definitely mixed or most factual. So I just thought that was interesting. And like I said, they were talking about mainstream media bias, so I figured it was good to just put something in. And like I said, I'm going to remind myself to look at Good Morning America and see about that one, because I watch that one every day. All right, what's next? All right, liberal versus conservative. So we were talking about, or they were talking about, excuse me, conservatives. So I wanted to kind of break down what is it really, what's the basics by being liberal versus conservative? And this is from a Student Daily News, and as you can see, it's right center, mostly factual. Because sometimes I have a hard time, because I feel myself as more midline, and I'll explain to it when we're going through the comments, that that liberal versus conservative is different to me. So liberals, they believe in government action to achieve equal opportunity and equality for all. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but basically that's the concept. Conservatives believe in personal responsibility, limited government, free markets, individual liberty, traditional American values, and a strong national defense. So let's break down some of the subcategories in these and what they basically mean. Abortion for liberals is a woman has the right to decide what happens to her body. Abortion for conservatives is human life begins at conception. So abortion is murder. Death penalties. Liberals think it should be abolished. Conservatives think it's a punishment that fits the crime of murder. The economy. A Marxist system in which government regulates the economy is best. Government must protect citizens from greedy big business. That's liberals. The conservative side, free market system, competitive capitalism, and private enterprise create the greatest opportunity and the highest standard of living for all. Now, I'd like to ask anybody out there also who's a conservative or liberal, if these meet your definitions of what you feel. For example, I'm what I consider an independent, and I believe, you know, in a woman's right to choose. I also kind of believe in the death penalty. The free market one, I think there needs to be a little bit of a thing in. So, like I said, as an independent, I think I fall on both sides for depending on what the subject is. Couple more here. Education. Public schools are the best way to educate students. Vouchers take money away from public schools is the liberal standpoint. Conservatives think vouchers create competition. Energy. Oil is depleting. They want to find other sources. More green sources are liberal. Conservatives, oil, gas, and coal are good sources of energy and are abundant. And they're true. It is abundant. I don't know if it's a good source. Physician-assisted suicide. This is kind of close to me because I'm a PA, and I have mixed feelings on this. I think sometimes it's right. I think sometimes it's not right. I think there needs to be standards with it. But you can see the liberals feel euthanasia should be legalized. A person has the right to die with dignity by his own choice. conservatives, neither euthanasia nor physician-assisted suicide should be legal. It's immoral and unethical to end life. So that's a tough one. Gun control. Additional gun control laws are necessary to stop gun violence and limit criminal access to guns. That's liberals. My personal opinion is I do believe in gun control. I don't think it's going to limit access to criminals having guns. I think criminals are always going to get guns. But I don't believe you should have unlimited access to any weapon you want. We've had discussions of this when I was back on the panel about like the ability to own machine guns and grenade launchers, and I think there needs to be limits. Conservatives, gun control laws do not prevent criminals from obtaining guns. More guns in law-abiding citizens means less crime. Okay. Healthcare. Liberals support a free and low-cost government-controlled healthcare. Conservatives support competitive, free-market healthcare systems. All Americans have access to healthcare. And lastly, same-sex marriages. Liberals believe it's love between two people. Conservatives believe a union of one man and one woman. So as you can see, there's definitely differences between conservatives and liberals. And like I said, these are some of the points that I got. And like I said, I would encourage anyone to send me information. If you're a conservative and you want to tell me, no, this is what I feel is conservative, I'm more than happy to read it on the air. And same with liberals. All right, what's next? Breakdown of the political parties. So they were talking about political parties and conservatives and liberals, as we just did in the last section. So I kind of wanted to get a breakdown of what the U.S. is in general for conservatives versus liberals versus independents. So I went to Gallup. Gallup is the least biased, so they're very central line, and they're very high factual reporting. Let's look. So this is kind of a breakdown since 2004 of surveyed percent of people that are Republicans, that are independent, and that are Democrats. And I've highlighted the highest year for each group. So as you can see, the highest year for Republicans was 37% in 2005, when there was 27% independents and 35% Democrats. the highest Democrats was 2009, and lo and behold, the highest independents are right now in 2022. And these are all done in January surveys. I just wanted to do one snap point of the year. It seems, from what I can see, for most of the years, Democrats slightly out-edge Republicans in general. But independents make up a very large base, so they're the ones that actually vote Republican or Democrat that actually swing an election to me. All right. Oh, my God, this is right. We went on the Keystone Pipeline again. First of all, I just want everyone to know, again, the Keystone Pipeline does exist. It is current. It is running from Alberta, Canada, all the way down to Texas. it's not a question. It's the Keystone Pipeline extension, which is the dotted line that President Biden nixed when he came into office, and that was under a lot of court battles when President Trump was in office and tried to approve it. So the Keystone Pipeline does exist currently. And they were talking about, you know, the tar sand again. I want to go over this one more time because I think this is very important of why he nixed the Keystone Pipeline extension. And this, again, is from National Geographic, pro-science, which means it's not, they say it's not biased either way, it's just the science, and very high factual reporting. One of our panelists mentioned that they should be very safe, but if you look down, the Defense Council said that the piping of Dilbit, which is the basically the tar sand coal, is like sandblasting the inside of a pipe, and it's 16 times more likely to leak than that of carrying regular crude oil. and so this just talks about going over the Ogallala Aquifer, which is one of the biggest types of underground water systems we have in the United States. So basically, it is more hazardous than regular oil, and it's more likely to leak than regular oil. And again, the Keystone Pipeline does exist. Okay, they were talking about leaks. And I got this from the New York Times, which is left center, high factual. The original Keystone Pipeline, which began in 2010, again, as I said, carries crude oil from Alberta to Texas. And it's about 2,687 miles of pipeline long. So let's talk about the major leaks. And again, this is from the New York Times. In October 31st of 2019, 383,000 gallons of crude oil leaked into North Dakota. There was another one in October of 2019, about 84,500 gallons leaked into McKenzie County, which is close to the Montana border. The biggest spill they have was in 2017. South Dakota had a spill of 407,000 gallons of this tar sand oil. And then there was a couple other spills of around 16,000 gallons in 2011 in North Dakota and 2016 in South Dakota. From the other places I was looking, there's been a total of 21 spills, but most of them are 10, 5 gallons, very light spills before they caught them. These are the major spills that I saw. So again, I encourage you to look up, if you're in favor of the Keystone Pipeline extension, I encourage you to look up the toxicity of tar sand oil and the route it was going to take and what potential for problems were. Again, I'm not trying to go left or right. I'm just saying looking at our environment and our country, and I'm happy they didn't do it personally. Oh, gas prices. This was a big one. How do gas prices compare around the world, someone mentioned. So I went to Forbes magazine, and they're right center, mostly factual. And I found this interesting graphic that shows the gas prices around the world. And obviously Russia, which is a big gas producing country, is very low. Venezuela is low. North Africa is low. The Middle East is low. And then you start going up from there. Now, I apologize because I'm colorblind, so I can't get quite this. But it looks to me like Europe and Scandinavian countries are by far the highest. Then the United States and Asia, India, Australia, South Africa look like they're kind of there also. Then it kind of goes down. But this was from March 7th of 2022. All right. How much oil did the U.S. import from Russia? So I thought this was really interesting also. first of all, Russia supplied approximately 6% compared to what the U.S. was making itself. So I got the U.S. numbers, and as you can see, I went from 2016 to 2021. In 2021, we made $4,082,478,000 barrels of oil. We imported from Russia in 2021 245 million barrels of oil. So again, it was about 6% compared to what we make in the United States. So it's not a lot, but it definitely was, if you looked, I mean, 245 million barrels of oil seems to be a lot to me. But that was just the numbers, and I've got all the list here from 1995 to 2021 for how much oil we did import from Russia. And as you can see, the very least was 1995, where it looks like we only did 9,071,000 barrels of oil. So pretty interesting. And again, this was from the U.S. Department of Energy, Office of Science, and their pro-science, very high factual reporting. All right, what is next? I know it's something to do with oil or gas. Gas prices in the United States. One panelist was talking about New York and California have the highest gas prices, and this is actually from AAA. I didn't have a rating on them, but I mean, most everyone knows AAA. I think they're very independent. I could be wrong. And they talk about gas prices as of March 14th of 2022. So as you can see, the whole West Coast definitely by far has very high gas prices besides Connecticut over there. And is that Illinois? Yes, Illinois. They all have very high gas. D.C. And Hawaii. All have very high gas prices, the highest in the nation. Then it kind of runs down to the Midwest, where it's the lowest. Texas is low. New York, Vermont, Connecticut, Pennsylvania, New Jersey are all mid. They're in the 4.2 to 4.4 cents per gallon. So this was just an update from AAA, which I thought was interesting. Why is California gas taxes or gas cost so high? This is from the New York Times, and you can see left center, high factual. Most of our gas is because we have taxes on it. So you can see through this, United States reached a new high of 4.173 gallons. This was from March 9th. California was much higher at 5.44 cents average. Most of our high fuel prices are because of our taxes. We pay approximately $1.27 on each gallon for taxes last month. And some of that is the state gasoline tax and also the tax for reducing greenhouse emissions regulatory programs. So we pay a lot. So if we cut that down, if we took that 1.27 cents away, we'd be very close to the national average. And again, that doesn't include federal tax also. This was cool. they were going through a discussion on the show about transitioning from horses to cars and how long that took. Was it fast? Was it slow? Was it easy? So I kind of found out some information on this. I went to the Globe and Mail, which is close to least, but a little bit more right center, very high factuality. And I found out, first of all, the first car was built by, obviously, Ford Motor Company in 1896. And what I found out from this source is the shift from horses to cars was actually about a 50-year period. It was a lot of safety issues, environmental, economic challenges. I thought that was cool, too. A century ago, horse-pulled carriages, or larger omnibuses, as they were called, were the main source of transportation. So as you can see, they started about 1900, where there's very little, you know, cars at all. About 1910, it looks to me, they start to roll out. Then 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, it's by far. But it looks like they actually overtook horses in about, let's see that chart, 1928? Looks like cars overtook horses. But then by the time horses were kind of run out as sources was about 60 years. So that was the answer to that question that some of the panelists had asked. Oh, do windmills kill birds? Interesting. So this is from The Hill. And this was a statement they had brought up because President Trump had stated that they kill massive amounts of birds and eagles and other stuff. So the panelists were bringing it up. I think Chris actually mentioned it and was trying to get input from the other panel. So I got this from The Hill, which is least biased, mostly factual. So we got to take that into account. But the answer is yes, windmills do kill birds, but far less than other reasons. The estimation was that windmill kills anywhere from 234,000 to 328,000 birds per year. And this was according to a study by the federal scientists. But when compared to other things, such as collisions with cell and radio towers, they said that caused about 6.8 million deaths of birds. And cats kill between 1.4 to 3.7 billion. So yes, windmills do kill. So do cars. I mean, how many of you had a bird run into your car or you ran into a bird? So everything causes death on everything, but windmills was definitely not a big contributor to death of birds. All right. Oh, does the present affect gasoline prices? One of our panelists was talking about that. And I went to Forbes, and I basically, which is right center, I figured I'd run and go with the more right on this one, and mostly factual. And I found there's definitely multiple reasons for fuel costs. And this was a good article by this person in Forbes magazine. They talked about COVID being part of the problem. Before the pandemic, there was about 13 million barrels per day produced in the United States. As in, by May of 2020, oil production had dropped to 9.7 million. So the pandemic crushed oil demand in 2020. I mean, no one was going to work. No one was driving. Any of you that were like me that had to work, because I worked medicine, the roads were empty and bare. So people just weren't driving. So some oil companies went out of business, especially some of the small ones. And the wells were actually capped. They didn't think they were going to be used again. Some workers left the oil industry. People went back to work, and the demand came back up again. This caused rising oil prices in response to insufficient supplies. And that's the predominant reason for the surge in gasoline prices. Let's look a little more into this, though. So, in the last 3 months of President Trump's administration, oil prices rose by 32% as demand bounced back. So, it started at like $39.4 per barrel in October of 2020. The price averaged $52 per barrel in January of 2021 in Trump's last month. In the first 3 months of President Biden's administration, it rose another 19% to $61 per barrel. And the next 3 months, which was April to June, it rose another 17% to $72 a barrel, $72.50 a barrel. Then it kind of bounced between 70 and 80 until January of 2022. So most people attribute the entire price rise to President Biden, but in reality, it began before Biden took office, and they say neither Trump nor Biden were at fault for this. These price surges were taking place all over the world, so it wasn't just the U.S. Then there is what we call the Putin effect. So in January of 2022, the average price moved up to $83.22 a barrel, and in February, when Russian actually invaded Ukraine, the price jumped to $91.64. Now, they do say that, yes, President Biden did have an action that caused it to jump when he decided to stop the import of Russian oil, which caused the prices to jump to $120 a barrel. So I guess that's the issue that I can see that President Biden did. He stopped that importing. But I think by survey, most people wanted us to ban all Russian oil for the invasion of Ukraine. But anyway, so they say it's kind of come back down a little bit, but that was the big thing that President Biden did that made it worse, was banning Russian imports of oil. Okay, what happened to our 401ks? There was a couple comments, I guess, on Facebook Live about this. So I wanted to look a little bit more into that. And I got this from Bloomberg News, which is slightly left-center, mostly factual. And it was an article by this woman, Susan Woolley. It was written February 18th, 2022, which was very good. And she said, entering 2022, the balances were at a record high for 401ks. And just a few weeks into it, it turned completely around. And they looked at actually the 15 largest funds in 401ks and measured them. And I got them here. You can see a year ago, for example, where's like this one? Vanguard Prime Cap was up like 10% and is currently down like 7 or 8%. There's only one that didn't go down. That's Dodge and Cox stock, which unluckily I don't have that. Most of mine from my 401ks are Vanguard from the different medical facilities I worked at. I think I have a Fidelity. I don't remember. I'm almost positive I do. And you see that dropped a lot. So there's definitely been a lot of droppage in 401ks due to the whole circumstance of 2022 right now. Oh, joy. All right. So first of all, I'd like to thank you all for listening to We Could Be Wrong. Thank you for listening to Just the Facts, that We Could Be Wrong, but Who Cares After Show. Again, if you would like to send me some information, or you want me to check up on a source, or you want to give me additional information, or you want to send comments, just email me at wcbwjustthefacts@aol.com. I'm more than happy to read any emails, and if they're interesting, I'll read them on the air, so we can try to get opinions. If you want me to look something up, I will do that also. Again, if you have comments for me, please send it there. If you know better sources for media bias checks, please let me know. Anything you want to send, I'm totally fine with. Anyway, I'd like to thank you for listening today, and I hope you have a great day. Oh, come on.